Welcome to the Technology Equals Equality podcast. This is episode 11. Welcome back to episode number 11 of the Technology Equals Equality podcast. Thank you so much for joining me here this week. I'm your host, Lori Brooks, and I am so super excited about this week's episode. Today, I have the privilege of speaking with Bernd Schuner, a truly inspirational success story in the tech entrepreneurship. Bernard is the co-founder of ThingMagic, a garage-grown RFID technology company led by a small group of MIT Media Lab grads. And the early innovator of the Internet of Things, Schuner led his company through the ups and downs of a startup, ultimately selling to Trimble Navigation. And for those of you who are unaware, Trimble Navigation is a multi-billion dollar multinational tech company where Schuner currently works as the VP of Business Development for ThingMagic. So, Bernd, welcome, and thank you for joining me.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Certainly. So I know you started off here in Massachusetts in a garage with a couple of guys, and I'm going to guess at that point you were not at all thinking that it would evolve into ThingMagic as it is today. So tell us the story of how it is that you once saw the future before ThingMagic became your reality.
Well, maybe I go back even a little further. When I studied engineering in Germany and was getting ready for a very traditional German engineering career, not a bad thing, but also not the most exciting way of spending a life. And I never really anticipated doing all the things that I ultimately did when I came to America. All of a sudden, it was possible to actually have an academic career, right? Become a professor. Coming out of MIT. And then at the end of that period as a grad student at MIT, all of a sudden entrepreneurship seemed like a possibility, right? Which I had never anticipated in Germany, where it's a lot harder to get started because of a lack of infrastructure. Right. So when we started ThingMagic, we certainly didn't think we would be the dedicated RFID company that we ended up being. We started with a rather broad technology portfolio that all of us had worked with already at MIT in the lab, and then only gradually started to transform ourselves into a product company, which is the ThingMagic that we have today and that we sold to Trimble.
Excellent. And once you decided to found ThingMagic, can you share with us what was it, you know, your first couple of steps that you guys took?
Well, the first step after we decided that to do it was to clean out the garage of the, the only homeowner among ourselves. In hindsight, I must say we didn't fix the garage very well. We didn't have heat. We didn't have a bathroom. And those little details do matter, especially when you're starting a company in Massachusetts where it's getting cold very quickly.
Right. And I remember that story from last month, having witnessed your speech at the Microsoft Nerd Center. It was very funny, the story that you were telling about cleaning out the garage. I was chuckling the whole way through. So thank you for that. What did you guys find to be one of the most difficult parts of starting ThingMagic? Why did you find it was the most difficult, and how did you overcome that? You know, aside from the garage itself, what did you find to be some of the more difficult steps of starting up?
There's all obviously the usual issues that you're facing as when you start a company, finding money, not having a salary for a few months. So those were definitely difficult, but the overarching theme of difficulty for me personally was dealing with the uncertainty of not really knowing where that whole thing is going. And that was a feeling and if you want, a difficulty that we had to deal with over the entire 10 years that we were independent. So that never stopped being an issue, right? You never really knew what tomorrow would bring and where you would end up a year later. It always looked good and it was always fun and exciting. But being able to sort of live with the notion that you don't know what tomorrow looks like, I find that to be a hard thing.
Definitely. And when you're looking at that, it's somewhat of a mindset shift. And how do you feel that you attain that mindset shift to keep you guys going? You know, what was it that really propelled you guys to continue with Thing Magic? Because, of course, it really is an up and down kind of road. And when you're out there and dealing with that uncertainty, you know, what was it that helped you guys to overcome that?
I think there's a number of contributors to that. You know, one is, you know, we were a team of five, and not all five of us made it all the way through. In fact, only two, one of my co-founders and I, were with the company when we got acquired. But having, you know, a team and having people to work with is a very, very important help when you get through these phases of difficulty where it looks like it's not going anywhere, or it looks like you're going bankrupt, or you can't make payroll. So that's really when you need the team, and you need to say, you know, no, there is going to be another, a path forward, right? So, I think the team members become very important, and it's also important to, pick the right team members, because if you don't have that support, then I think, it's just a big battle.
Right. Right. No. And in your book, The Tech Entrepreneur Survival Guide, you really break down the six essential roles, of that team in building the tech startup. And when did you know it was time to really create your founding team, or did you all kind of come together at once? How did you begin designating those roles that you discuss in the book, such as, you know, the superstar and the prima donna genius? Can you share a little bit about each of those six roles and how that came to be?
Yeah, let me first answer your first question. Yeah, did we really know now is the time to found the company? It's one of those cases where we had to leave school, right? We got our degree. There was no way we could hang out in the lab any longer. As I write in the book, unlike many tech entrepreneurs who leave school to found a company, we had to found a company because we had to leave school.
Right.
So it was a little upside down, if you want. On the other hand, I think that is actually the reality for many startup founders, right? It's not that you manage your career and you carefully plan that, I do this job for 3 years and then I found a company. And that's when I select a team. Yeah, a lot of it is accidental. You know, you come across the right people, you come across an interesting idea, you get laid off, so you're disgruntled about the whole corporate America, and then you basically do something on your own, right? And that was exactly what happened in our case. So in terms of, then the roles, even there, I think a lot of it sort of just falls into place because people have different preferences, right? Some of my co-founders wanted to stay very close to the technology and wanted to have as little to do with business as possible. And even without, planning that out, that's what they ended up doing, right? In my case, I happened to be the first one to work for the company full time. So I had to do a lot of the administrative work, the setting up. I had to do a lot of the business development work to get the company going and make sure that there's cash flow. So, and then we more or less stayed in those roles over the period that we were working together. In terms of the six roles that I identified, I talk about the prima donna genius, which is really the one techie that's necessary to have a technology company. Right? You can't do a tech company without an engineer or technologist. I like to see a leader on the team, someone that the others are looking up to, because especially for a large founder group, it's difficult if everything is done based on consensus and democratic decisions. Once in a while, the company has to make a decision, even though there is no consensus, and they have to make it, right? There's no, you can't just let things go without a decision. So that's an important role. The sales animal is an important role, and in some ways, I grew into that at Think Magic. As someone who looks at a product and says, "Yes, I can sell this," and then goes and sells it. Right? Technologists like to do things because they can be done, or because they're challenging, or because they're interesting. That's not enough to build a company.
No, definitely, and I happen to love the nicknames for each of the roles. I found them very fitting. But share with us how it is each of the roles began forming operational procedures amongst the group, or was this something that the group as a whole took on and chose to begin forming, or was this something that more of the leader role took on as an individual task?
I think it grew rather organically at Think Magic in part. Mm-hmm. The way we had started the company in a bootstrapping mode, which essentially means you're always a little behind in terms of money. You're always a little behind in terms of hiring people. You sort of know that you need a quality control process, but there's, right. There's just no way to sort of put that together in a very systematic fashion, right? You basically try to carve out a few hours from someone's time and say, "Can you check this thing out, make sure that it works?" and of course, that's certainly not doing it by the book, but it also makes sure that you're not really creating any sort of unnecessary processes, right? So you're always a little behind, which means you probably have fewer people that you need, which also means you're spending fewer money than you probably should. But I have found that to be a fairly healthy filtering mechanism as you go about building the company. And then eventually, when you do get funding, now you're trying to catch up to some extent and put these processes in place by, for example, hiring an executive who knows how to put these processes in place. For example, a QA manager, right, or a VP of development, or a director of finance or CFO, right? So in my experience, there's always time to correct for these little sins that you commit early on when you're not totally on the ball because you just can't afford it or you don't have the time. So my experience is rather, take it a little slowly with the big processes, and then make sure that your business proposition and your value proposition is sound, because you can catch up on these other issues.
Right. No, definitely. I completely understand. And, not everyone in the audience not everyone in my audience is actually looking to run out and found or even co-found a tech startup. But for those who are looking to get involved with a tech startup, what would your advice be for those prospective employees who are, prior to joining a tech startup team?
My advice would be don't do it for the money. Right. Don't believe in what the media is suggesting, that if you basically found a technology company, you'll be a billionaire. It doesn't work that way. There's success stories where indeed an entire employee base becomes millionaires, like Google or Facebook. But that is the very, very rare exception. And there's many others where you live a very interesting, but modest middle-class life as a startup employee. it's definitely a very nice thing to do and a very interesting and exciting career. But don't do it for the money. Do it because you like the technology or you like the idea. You like working for a small venture where, everything you do matters a great deal, much more than a big company. Or because you like the people, right? If you like the founding team, and you think these guys are going to do something great, that's a good reason to join a small company.
Right. Believing in the people definitely makes a huge difference with startups. And, in the Tech Entrepreneur Survival Guide, you actually admit that there's a lot of things that can really go wrong with a tech startup. But what would you caution as one of the biggest mistakes that first-time entrepreneurs tend to make?
It's a little difficult to sort of generalized, because unfortunately there's usually something else that goes wrong each time. So it's not that there's the one thing. If you can avoid the one thing, one mistake, that you will be, you have it made. But one of the things that I caution people about is to take it slowly early on, in terms of figuring out what to do, hiring people, especially expensive people, top executives. There is a time to do that, but if you do it too early, you're sort of putting the company on a path that may just end at a big with a big implosion, because you have to make sure that the business can support it, and that the idea and the actual concept can support the hiring and the money that you're spending. And especially for companies who get significant funding early on, it's sort of tempting to then quickly ramp up staffing, hire a CEO, hire executives for everything that needs to get done.
Right.
And then before you know it, the money runs out. And if those guys haven't produced anything, you probably will lose your company.
Right.
And nobody benefits. So especially for young tech founders, my advice is take it slowly, and really make sure that you have something going for yourself of value that you ramp up at a reasonable pace.
Right. Outsourcing is always a great thing, but doing the work first and making sure that you have the ability to support that outsourcing is important. It's something that should be ventured into slowly, as you said. And you went out and you found the pain in an emerging industry with RFID, and you really began serving this market. But a lot of entrepreneurs have a hard time finding the pain in an industry, or even coming up with an industry to serve, for that matter. So my show is designed to help entrepreneurs come up with ideas for new innovative companies to help solve the pain in an industry that they may not have thought of. So Brent, let us help you. I want you to take a moment and think about this. But if you had a magic wand and could change anything at all in your business at this point in time, what would it be and why? We want to know how this affects your day-to-day operations. And if solved, what do you think the impact would be for your business and the industry as a whole?
Well, our industry has been inflict with pain in so many different ways. we set out to fix a pain of the retail supply chain industry, which was
right.
to essentially allow them to know where their goods are in the supply chain. Right? Wonderful idea. Wouldn't it be great if we knew where everything was? Right? And we're talking literally everything, every good, every piece of merchandise that travel from China to the US or Europe and so forth. Right? So that's where we started out, and the retail industry was definitely excited about that. But then when it came to actually really implement that dream, it was them who inflicted pain on us, because they just didn't want to spend any money on it at some point.
Right.
So that was certainly a very difficult phase for my company, but and lots of other companies in my industry. Many of them didn't make it. We were happy that, or glad that we could, change our strategy, consolidate and find our way through that bursting bubble of the RFID industry. And then we came out okay at the other end, right? But, there continues to be a little bit of pain in that industry, in that it has never really lived up to its potential and promise in terms of the size of that market and the quantity that companies buy. So if I could change something, then I would definitely change it on that on the market side. I think a little bit more traction from the customer side would do this industry very well.
Totally understood. So we are definitely putting our listeners to work then in terms of getting traction there. So thank you, Bernard, so much for taking the time out of your day this morning to sit and chat with myself. And I know that you know, sharing your journey and your ideas are taking time out of your day. So please take a moment and just share the best way for our listeners to find you.
The best way to find me is to go to my website, which is where you get more information about the book, and also you can purchase the book from various retailers. And the website is, the easiest way to get there is myfirstname.us. So that's BERND.US. One more time, BERND.US.
Excellent, Britta. Thank you. And I will be sure to include links to everything we've discussed in our show. And to grab a copy of the Tech Entrepreneur Survival Guide, you can check out Bernard's show notes page on our website as well
at technologyequality.com/Bernard. That's BERND.
But Bernard, thank you, thank you, thank you again for your time this morning. I truly appreciate you joining myself, and I know my listeners appreciate your time as well.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Thank you so much for joining me here again for episode number 11. I truly appreciate you taking the time to check out the show. If you have any ideas, thoughts, questions, comments, whatever on the show, please reach out to me through the brand new Technology Equality Facebook group. I can't wait to hear from all of you. And don't forget to reach out to Bernard through our show notes page at technologyequality.com/Bernard. And until our next episode, where we continue to hear the journey, find the pain, and create solutions, enjoy the week.